Morning. Honorable members, I'm sure we can start with our meeting today. I'm sure we are all settled. Good morning, honorable members. The DG and his entourage and our guests who are here with us today, you are all welcome to our Home Affairs Portfolio Committee meeting. Honorable members, we have visitors from Human Rights, Human Rights Commission, who are here with us just to observe the proceedings today. DG, without any waste of time, we would like to afford you the time to take us through the presentation, but I thought it would be better if we start formal today and start by introducing ourselves because we have visitors today. My name is Maggie Maunye, a member of the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs. Andre. Can we introduce ourselves?
My name is Andre Gaum from the ANC. I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs.
Grace Bosman Bambiri, a member of Home Affairs Portfolio Committee, sitting next to Ndate Gaum.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Belle Peterson Majuna from Gauteng Province, from the ANC, but from this portfolio of Home Affairs. Thank you.
My name is Kiki Khwepana. I'm Western Cape Province Portfolio Committee of Home Affairs.
Sorry, my name is Graham and my surname is McIntosh. I come from KwaZulu-Natal, and I am a member of the committee, and I'm a member of the Congress of the People, COPE.
Morning, everyone. My name is Manny Freitas. I'm from the best province, Gauteng, and I'm a member of the DA.
Thank you, honorable members. DG.
Chair and the honorable members, my name is Kusela Pleni, DG for Home Affairs.
Morning, honorable chair and members. My name is Rosanne Rasifinha, the CFO of Home Affairs.
Honorable chair and honorable members, good morning. My name is Major Kobes from Home Affairs.
Honorable chair and honorable members, my name is Castro Quella. I'm the head of Counter Corruption and Security in the Department of Home Affairs.
Morning.
Ah, that's the IT person.
She's the one next to me.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. My name is Lomakao, a DDG for IT. Thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members and Guests. My name is Wasim Kize, the Deputy Director General for Civic Services.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Avril Williamson. I'm the Head of Human Resources for the
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. My name is Jackie McKay, Head of the Learning Academy.
Good morning, Honorable Members, Chair. My name is Dion Erasmus. I'm the Head of Legal Services in the Department. Thanks.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Yusuf Simon. I'm the Provincial Manager for Home Affairs in the Western Cape.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Members. My name is Abednego Mvula. I'm the Provincial Manager of Northern Cape Province.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I'm Josephine Mayer, the Chief Director for Revenue and Budget within Home Affairs.
Good morning, Honorable Members, Honorable Chair. I'm John Carter, Chief Director for Planning.
Good morning. My name is Adam Salmon. I do research for the Portfolio Committee. I'll take your name.
Yeah. Good morning. Dima Tonsi, Committee Secretary.
Thank you, Honorable Members, our officials. Today we will be focusing on our department strategic plan and the budget. And the DG, the floor is yours.
Thanks, the Honorable Chair and the Honorable Members. Today, as the Chair has indicated, we are here to present the strategic plan of the Department for the period 12-13 to 2014-15. And we submitted the strategic plan on the 7th of...
Just to interrupt, DG, we noticed that according to your document here, it's annual performance plan, and we thought we're supposed to discuss the strategic plan. If you could maybe clarify that for us.
Well, the Treasury regulations have changed now to annual performance plans. So, as a department, I work here today to present that for the period 2012-13 to 2014-15. Secondly, Chair, is to apologize for the Minister and the Deputy Minister. The Minister was not going to come, and then the Deputy was going to join us, but now the Minister called the Deputy Minister now to join the Minister on the call. So, as a department, we'll be presenting. Chair, we are indicating that we submitted the annual plan on the 7th of March in terms of the deadline, and as well we submitted our report for the distribution to the committees on Wednesday night. Chair, we want to be covering what is the vision, mission, values and mandates, which is already known to the Portfolio Committee, and as well as the government priorities. There's been no changes on that. And then what is the DHA performance agreement and progress in key areas of 2009 to 2012, and then the transformation of the Department of Home Affairs and strategic objectives and output for each outcome, and the strategic focus going forward. However, Chair, in terms of the details of the target to the strat plan. We didn't put it in the presentation because it's there in the plan, but we can respond to any question which should be asked for us for clarity. Chair, as I said, that the vision and mission and values of the department have not been changed, it's still the same. The mandate of the department, as we know, that DSA is a custodian, protector, and verifier of identity and status of citizens and other persons resident in South Africa as recorded on the National Population Register. This includes issuing travel documents. National legislation must provide for the acquisition, loss, and restoration of citizenship, Chapter 1 of the Constitution of the South Africa. In terms of the immigration services, the DSA controls, regulates, and facilitates immigration and the traffic of persons through ports of entry. It also services foreign missions, enforces the Immigration Act, and determines the status of asylum seekers and refugees in accordance with international obligations. In that regard, the identity and immigration systems play a critical role in ensuring the integrity of state and society and the security of every citizen. They are also central in service delivery and development. In terms of the government 12 priorities, Chair, as I said, they have not been changed, they are still the same. So as a department, we still contribute on number 3, number 5, and number 12. The Minister's Performance Agreement is still stand the same, there's been no changes. It's still that for the periods. So when we deal with the outcomes, they are responding into that performance agreement. Well, Chair, we thought it would be important for us just to highlight how we've progressed in these years. This slide, Chair, we first dealt with the issue of the birth registration. As we said, that registration of children at within 30 days is important for us as it is the only entry into the National Population Register. So, Chair, you are demonstrating that for the 3 years, in 2009-10, the blue bar is showing that at that year, within 0 to 30 days, we're able to register about 455,853 children within 30 days. And then with the late registration of birth, which is more than 15 years, we registered 174,084. Then the longer bar is the registration between 31 days and the 15 days, and 15 years. Then, Chair, when you move to the next year, you can see that it has increased the registration now of birth within 30 days. It was 500,524. And then the LRB is still high at 190,091. However, now the children which are registered between 31 and 14 days is starting to drop, because at the end, what we want to see is that the blue bar must go up and the brown one must come down and the LRB must be zero. Then in the 2000 and the current year, which is not yet complete, is up to end of January, we are already now close to the, just up to end of January, we are still left with 2 months. We are already now at 455,821, which to us says we are going to surpass the 2010-11. And the LRB is where it is showing good results for us, that now we're at 89. So it means our campaign for registering people at early ages is starting to show the results, because now it's only 89,000. And as well as with the children which are registered between 31 and 15 years is 908. Which we hope that bar, we wanted to reduce it every year. So, Chair, we think that the campaign is starting to show in the department in the right direction. How do we do this? Our strategy
has been to make sure that we connect the health facilities, because once we connect them, it's going to be helping us to be able to achieve this process. So we're saying in 2009-10, there was no target set as such, but we really moved as a starting year. We registered 127 health facilities, and then the total which was connected was 127, then give us the total number where we're still collecting, because it is important for us, that column, that it doesn't mean if the hospital is not connected, we are not collecting. So we are collecting up to 227, and the total health facilities where beds are registered in 2019 were 354. Then in the following year, we set ourselves a target, which was 10, 11, which was 120, but the number of health facilities connected and operational were 46, and then the total health facilities now connected grew up to 173, and then now where we are collecting now dropped, because now we've connected hospitals, which is 181, still the number 354. Then in the current year, which is not yet complete, our target was 126, hospitals connected 43, and then give us the total number of 235. Then that will drop now to 140 where we collect. However, Department of Health is also increasing on their side. They're not waiting for us. Now, health has got 375 hospitals now where the beds are. But what we're showing here is to say we are really focusing on this target. We will want at the time where there is no hospital where we still go and collect manually. In terms of the footprint, in terms of the number of offices, before, as a department, we were just opening offices only meant that we've got a rental. But we realized that that is not an office. An office needs to have people, needs to have infrastructure, and have everything. So if you look at the numbers, are not as high the numbers which are able to open, because the cost of opening an office is too much in terms of the number of people we have. However, in the 2009-10, the target was 13 offices, but we managed to open 21 additional offices, which brought the number now to 691 number of points for Department of Home Affairs. In 2010, it was 2, but because of we prioritize every time we find savings, we open 10, which gives us 701. In the 11-12, we have added now 4, which gives us the total number of 701 in terms of the offices across the country. Then we had another strategy of using the mobile offices, which are in the wheels. In terms of that share, we've got 117 mobile offices, which are split into that numbers in terms of the provinces, Eastern Cape, Free State. Also in that one, before, we're only having a driver who's driving the truck. But we're saying it can't be an office if you don't have people who must actually do the service, because now we are robbing Peter to pay Paul on the day of that truck, because now you go to the same office, you borrow two people, they go with the mobile truck, then in that office, there are less services to be provided. Then we took the decision to appoint staff now which are really dedicated for the mobile offices. So for now, we have filled 137 positions. So in those mobile offices, the people are dedicated now to work with the mobile offices. We still have a 54 vacant post. How do we count that? Is that for each truck, we will want to have a driver and two officials. Who must be in each mobile office. So one of the vehicles also for the department to be able to deliver on these objectives which they did with people was for us to really the issue of the stakeholder forums. You will recall that before the local government elections, we almost covered a lot of the district municipalities, but after the elections there have been changes, so we have to go back and work on those stakeholder forums. So for now, we're at 266 split per the provinces, so we're still left with the 15, because the total stakeholder forums we need to establish is 287. So now 15, we still need to work on them. Then the 28, we're still working on reviving, because they were established, and then the 244 are operational to give us the total of the 287. As well, check the strengthening of legislation within civics. The new civics legislation will enable processes to be made more secure and better service delivery. So during the year, Chair, we know that we put the amendment has been accepted in terms of SA Citizenship Act and as well as Birth and Death Registration Act. Also, the online verification of identity for third parties, online fingerprint verification to third parties enhances security and detects and reduces fraud. It can also potentially generate substantial revenue for the department. We have signed the MOUs with SAPRIC and SASA. SAPRIC connectivity to BankServe was implemented, and the stress test for commercial verification was performed, and this was launched in November last year. With regard to the immigration services, steps have been taken to secure the permitting system, among others were centralization and outsourcing visa application to specialist companies in selected countries. Chair, we, in the year, we've centralized now all our permits to headquarters. And then in the countries outside, we looked at the high volume countries, Nigeria, India, and China. We have appointed a company who collects all the visa documents and then submit to the to the missions for processing. And now we are looking to extend that in our priorities now for next year to other three countries. And then in terms of the amendment of legislation, we also amended the Refugee Act and the Immigration Act. So now we're in the process of finalizing the regulations. Also, the adjudication of asylum seekers has been speeded up, and the quality of decisions have been improved on what we've put in our refugee centers. And then the documentation of Zimbabwean projects has resulted in the 275 undocumented or fraudulent documented coming forward to apply for work, study, and business permits. The Department of Home Affairs has taken steps to integrate more closely with the Justice, Peace and Security Cluster. The department chairs the interagency forum of department involved in the border environment. With this chair, every 2 weeks, we meet with all the stakeholders in the border, which is defense, police, SARS, home affairs, state security, and other departments like agriculture, health, so that we make sure that at a border environment, we're starting now to really coordinate processes at a border level. The department has initiated a program to strengthen security at seaports. After identifying the problems, the department liaises with other departments to address gaps in capacity, infrastructure, and processes. So we piloted our project at the Cape Town Harbour. As the committee might be aware, as we reported in the last meeting as well, that now we have made sure that all the passenger liners and vessels, they only dock at a designated port of entry. So now we already have got a building now with from transport
authority. So we're finalizing now the lease agreement where we'll have a government house within the precinct of the harbor, where all the government departments will be housed within that building and be able effectively to manage harbor. A pilot training program was developed, and the assistance of experts from the Republic of Cuba and a group of 350 immigration officers was recruited from SANDF and trained and deployed at OR Tambo. The immigration officers that were at OR Tambo are being retrained with the redeployment to address serious gaps in various areas of the department. Chair, we've strengthened our processes at OR Tambo. However, there are still certain challenges which now we're working on as a cluster to make sure that the operations are coordinated so that now we know exactly what is happening in each port of entry. So that's what we're working on now at the OR Tambo. So in terms of HR, you'll recall that in terms of our operational model, in the 2009-10, we're on the zones. And then in 2010-11, we had to work on a really sensitive issue which now has been dealt with it and is settled now in the department, the issue of contract workers. When I go to another slide, you will see how many contract workers which we had in the department, but we had a strategy to work on that and improve the quality of the service by upgrading those positions when we're dealing with that matter to make sure that a front officer must not be looked like it's just a person for a rubber stamp. We ask ourselves a question to say we need to professionalize that area as well. But to do that, it's going to be very difficult to professionalize it at a level 3 positions. But if you go to a level 6, there is a possibility of able to attract people with certain skills in terms of junior degrees or diplomas and all that, which we're able to do that as a department. And then also the issue of our HR plan for the position for a period of 5 years, we developed that. And then we had, you know, our operational model in terms of processes, technology, and people, and as well as the reprioritization of the budget. When the CFO is dealing with the budget, also would indicate how we are trying to make sure that where the services are happening, that is at the provinces, how do we make sure that we give provinces enough budget and powers to deal with the issues. But for us, also, China, on the 12-13, really now our priority now will be making sure that those powers which we have agreed to be decentralized must be implemented. Provinces must be able to procure, they will have the local system, they must be able to appoint people at a particular level and all that. So that now we go back to what PFMA is aspiring for, which says let managers manage. So that's what we're looking at in the 12-13. This operational model is what we are operating with. So a provincial head, that's why now provinces, in another slide I'll indicate that they sit in the preparation of the strategic plan with the minister, and the provincial head is empowered to deal with everything within that province. If there's something goes wrong within the province, a provincial head is responsible. So the structure is that they've got a provincial support, where they've got a director of finance who is assisting the provincial head to discharge his or her functions, and then that provincial support is going to be growing in terms of your HR, your IT, your counter-corruption, and all that within that unit, so that a provincial head is an accounting officer of that particular province. Then, Chair, we've got refugee reception centers. They report into the provincial head, those refugee centers which are in that province. The headquarters is about policy, the provinces is about operations. Then, Chair, we're the district, we as a department, we are following an operational model in terms of making sure that now we appoint managers, we call them district managers operations. Their responsibility is to make sure that all the offices within the province are operational. They are not having staff in terms of running the actual products, but for them is to know that every day I must go to office A, I must go to office B to check whether other things happening at an office. So that is the district offices. So we have mapped them according to the demarcations of the district municipalities and as well as the metro. So where we've got a metro, we'll have a DMO, and then where we've got a district municipality, we've got a DMO which is running that district municipality. Then local offices are reporting to that DMO in terms of making sure that things are happening. And the port of entry, if there is a port of entry in that district municipality, is also reporting to the province. And then in the local office is where now we make sure that the DHA services, whether it is immigration or civics, are delivered in that office. The health institutions within that local office, and as well as the mobile offices which I've talked about, which are also under that local office. PSP stroke Tusong centers, the PSA, they had another model of delivering of services, which is the Tusong centers. So if there's a Tusong center in that area, the local office is responsible for that. So that's how Home Affairs is operating. So in terms of the staffing, as I indicated, that we are in the path of growing the department, but the resources are not always there for us to grow at the level which we want. But with the little which we have, is what we want to demonstrate what we're doing. So the total staff of the department, it was including the contract workers. For the first, if you look at 2008-09, it says now the field were 85 field post funded, head count 8560. Out of that, we are saying less the contract workers field post were 7440, the contract workers were 1120, and then the vacant funded posts were 3626. Then, Chair, what happened now in that year? There was a problem now of saying the department is on its transformation process. It was not yet closed, the process of how we'll be moving from the old structure to the new structure. Then a decision was taken to say, fine, if this thing is not yet closed, let us now appoint contract workers. That's why you will see now that in the 2009-10, we're now again that number of contract workers, which was 3190, it was to solve that problem of the 3626 because the decision was not yet taken. But now we also started now to absorb the contract workers now in the 2010-11, and we're left with 102. We absorbed, we also released, and then now we're left with a 1023, which now in the 11-12, that number has completely been cleaned. We're only left with the 35. The 35 contract workers is a contract worker in terms of the definition, but what we mean is that people are working in the ministry, the advisors to the ministry are appointed as contract workers. The people who are in the intern in the department, we still appoint them. In the definition, they are like a contract worker, but we don't have that contract worker which we have before, where people are just in our service force. We took a decision that in Home Affairs we'll never again have contract workers. We will appoint people as we've got jobs, but we've got the structure which is approved, then people can be applied and be appointed in the department. So, Chair, finally, what we're saying here is that now the total staff establishment now of the department, we are sitting now at 9,829, of which 8,496
our staff members, and then the 35 is contract worker, and what is funded is 1298, and then the total is 9829. So, say for the budget, we have split it according to that 9829. So, Chair, this is just to show now that how is the head count growing in Home Affairs. So, for each year, we took a clear decision that if a post becomes vacant, because a person resigns or whatever, that post will always keep it, and then it must be filled. So now we always get add a certain amount of positions in the department. So this is about the employment equity. We still, so that is still difficult. We are not yet, Chair, on the 50-50 split in terms of management. As we know that government is moving towards that principle to say we need to have a 50% of females at management as well as 50% of males. So what was shown here in this light is that where we are, if you look at that row, which is total percentage of females, we're saying in 2008-09, we're at 39%. In 9-10, we maintained that. In the 10-11, we're at 38% of the split because of the vacancies as well. But we are still not growing as such, but we really want to make sure that we push as a department to move on that. So as we got the post, we are trying now to target that we need to move into that level. So as a department, we are conscious of that. We are monitoring it. We've got the figures. But in terms of the numbers in the total department, we are saying now that in the 2008-09, we're 58-42%, and then in the 9-10, we're 60-40, we're still at 60-40 at the 10-11 in the total department. But that is not an issue for us. What is the issue for us is at a management level, which we need to focus on. So, Chad, this is a slide which is just showing to say, this is what we're trying to say, that female split and male female is the brown legend, whereas the blue is the male. So we are still we want to see this dropping, the blue to be equal to the brown. Well, Chair, this is the same, but just showing in terms now of the race in the department, because again, there are targets in terms of making sure that we balance. So we need to make sure that the rate of what we have in terms of Africans, whites, colors, and Indians. So where, Chair, we are still lagging behind is on our rate of the Indians in the departments, because they are even at 0.something, we're not even in a percentage, and as well as the colored community, we still need to look at that. So, Chair, this is what we give now in the department in terms of when we employ, so that now each and every program manager has to commit and say, in my unit, I will need to get these targets to make sure that we are able to reach what is expected. So, Chair, this is on the disability. Chair, disability is still a challenge, that there is a percentage which all the departments need to work towards, which is even in the process of it being increased from the 2%. But as departments, we are still not there. So, Chair, in the 2008-09, we had 0.35%, and 9-10 dropped 0.3%, and as well as 10-11, and 11-12, we're starting to show an increase, which is really insignificant. But what we have done, Chair, in the department, we have established a disability forum in the department, which is participating in the management structures of the department, so that at all times we need to ensure that we are putting processes to reach and even surpass that target. Chair, I've already talked to the slide in terms of you can just see that it just tells you that we need to make some inroads on this, more special around the Indian community and the Coloured community. Chair, disciplinary issues in the department, because we are coming in an era where the department was really at a level of free for all. So we had to put some concentration on that as we improved the disciplinary management in the department. It was also seen to us how that also changes the operations of the department. In the 2008-09, we had 366 cases. But now in 9-10, they dropped to 250. Which is a huge drop, which one can, we had to analyze that figure to say, is it a situation that we are not putting attention, why would it drop? But to us, Chair, was that, no, it will drop if the department has got clear processes, has got management in place. Because in the 2008-09, that's why in the 9-10, when we're prioritizing the 417 positions, it was more on management, because we were finding that offices, they were not having managers, we were able to supervise those offices. Immediately we put that, then it changes, because now people started to have somebody who's leading them. And then in the 10-11, we're at 139. Well, Chair, in terms of finance, we says yes, in 2008-09, we had a qualification on four matters. In 2009-10, it was a one matter, and then in 2010-11, we do not have a qualification, which we are pushing to go to a clean audit report. So having given the what are the highlights in terms of what we have achieved as against the previous plan, so what now we want to concentrate on, Chair, is the transformation of a department. We've got a vision of what should be the end state of this transformation. We are saying we want to look for a department which is really caring, which is professional, which is efficient, which is able to respond to the needs of the people. That is the end state of this department which we are looking at. So our strategic objective is really to ensure the fundamental transformation of the Department of Home Affairs. The key strategies in this regard achieve a vision of a Home Affairs official, because we're saying without people in Home Affairs, we won't be able to transform the department. It's not about machines, because we're dealing with people. So a people, human capital, is a major issue for the department. So we need an official who's willing and able to protect and serve their people. Such an official be patriotic, vigilant, caring, professional, and willing to go many extra miles to respond to the needs of the people. And want to build an integrated platform for a national identity system and an immigration system. Because, Chair, if we still continue with the systems which are not talking to each other, which are in silos, not necessarily only within the Department of the Home Affairs, but within the state, because police, SARS, SARS, we need to build a national identity system, which will be really a backbone of a security in any state and a key enabler of service delivery and development. In terms of that chair of transformation, where we are, the following were main steps taken to ensure collective engagement in the planning process. So this document, chair, is a product of this process. We had a strategic planning workshop for senior managers in August to analyze challenges and define priorities. And then in that management meeting, chair, we mean now your directors and your chief directors, your DDGs and the DG. And then we had now a mini retreat, as I indicated now, that the youth forum are sitting now in that forum. So in August, we had senior managers, but plus representatives now from the sections of the youth and of the disabled, so that we make sure that the outcome of the document is what has been canvassed in the department. Then in October, we had a retreat with the minister and the top management, which was in October, to confirm these priorities. And in that meeting, chair, all the provincial heads were sitting with that meeting. The minister, is the deputy minister, DG, DDGs, provincial managers, so that we make sure that the plan is not a top-down approach plan, but is a plan which is understood, because the provincial managers are the ones who are in the cold face with regard to them. Deliver of services. Then in February, chair, we called all heads of offices throughout the country in one room and say, these are the priorities of the department. What they think we can do best in order to deliver this, so that when they go back to their offices, they must go back their understanding what they need to do. So that when we are talking about this department, which must respond to the needs of the people, is not management at a certain level, is everybody. So that if that is not happening, we are able to say, you were there, why are you behaving in this particular manner? And then, chair, after that is the branch meeting. So there is a meeting which the minister is still going to be doing before her budget speech. So that minister now, as the political head of the department, is going to take this plan, and then we sign what we call is an operational plan now with the minister, so that all of us, as the employees of the department, we commit on making sure that these plans are delivered. Because one of the challenges in government is the one that we've got good plans, we've got clear objectives, but the challenge is on the implementation. So we want to see that with that process, we'll be able to improve as a department in terms of our implementation of the project. So we look at how this strategy has been evolving in the department, more special with the understanding that now Auditor General will be auditing the performance information. So we could see that about 2009-10, it was what was important was to have too many goals in an organization which is not helping in terms of delivery. So we try to narrow things and be focused. So in the 2009-10, we had 6 goals with 15 objectives and 40 outputs and 104 targets. So as we go, we are trying to improve and improve in our strategy. So we still maintain the 3 outcomes, and now for 12-13, now we've got 11 objectives, and we've got 24 outputs and 53 targets. So that our plan is trying to be smart in terms of it being specific, measurable, attainable, and time-bound, so that we make sure that the little money we have must be focused and directed. And we're saying out of that, the 36 of the 53 targets are for civics, and the 17, 36 of the 50 are for civics and immigration, and 17 are for other key support services. So in terms of the annual performance plan, I'll just touch on what are the outcomes, what are the strategic objectives. As I said, that now the actual targets are in the strategic plan. Whatever question, we will be able to respond to that and put them on the slides. So our outcomes, as we said, we have maintained them. There are three. It's to secure South African citizenship and identity. Outcome two is immigration managed effectively and securely in the national interest, including economic, social, and cultural development, a service that is efficient, accessible, and corrupt-free. So in terms of how we've put this in the document, this was just a sample of how we've developed that in the strategic plan. We give what is the outcome, and then now we give what is the strategic objective, as they want to say, to ensure that registration at birth is the only entry point for South Africans to National Population Register. And then we give what is the output for the year. And then from there now we give what was the baseline for our 2011-12, and then we give what is the annual target now for 12-13, 13-14, and 14-15. So these ones, which is the one I'm seeing there in the strategic plan, if there are questions, we will be able to respond to them. However, now in terms of taking just one objective, just go to the outputs for each one. On that one, we're saying, Chem, our output really is to increase an increase of 14% of births registered within 30 days of the birth event against an estimated 1.1 million births per annum. That 1.1 million is the figure which we get from Statistics South Africa. And then for us, we're saying now we are planning to increase that by 14% what we were able to reach in the previous year. And also on the issue of the late registration of birth, though, as I'm saying, that issue, we are really wanting to make sure that we clean it up. But in the event that we pick one, we really want to make sure that we do that within a period of 6 months, as there are processes of investigating that, going through the committees and all that. Then also, Chair, there is second civil registration and vital statistic African Ministerial Conference, which will be hosted by South Africa. As the Africa as a continent, they are looking at this issue of registration or of national population register as a key to any country. So in Africa, there are still countries who do not have a national population register. So there was this meeting now of African ministers, which was held at Addis, then decided to say something which as a continent we need to drive, which will help each and every country, because if we can know our population as a continent, that will give us a lot of advantages in terms of things which we need to know. So this, they will be coming to South Africa, it will be around September. We will be hosting that as South Africa and make sure that we are preaching this gospel throughout the continent. In terms of issuing IDs to citizens turning 16 years, we said now we want to make sure that all South African learners writing matric are issued with identity document as required by the examination regulations. So we are working with the Department of Education. We are focusing at schools, and based on that, we'll be able to make sure that there is no child who goes and writes matric without ID document. And what an increase in the issuance of identity documents, first issues to citizens 16 years of age and above. And also to ensure the registration of all South African citizens, foreign residents, refugees, and asylum seekers to enhance the integrity and security of identity. This is talking to the systems chairs I have talked to. that we need that national identity system with inherent biometric features developed and implemented, including business process reengineering. We want the technological solutions with biometric capability at all ports of entry developed and implemented. And then now the integrity and security of identity of the citizen, and short in terms of cleaning our national population register. In terms of ensuring a secure, the responsible, flexible immigration regime in support of national security priorities and interests, the chair will be finalizing the immigration policy and relevant legislation reviewed and implemented. I want the processing of visa applications streamlined at high volume foreign missions. So in the targets, it is there how many missions we have targeted to make sure that is implemented. In terms of the refugee management, it's for us to make sure that the amendments of the Refugee Act are implemented with a specific focus on enhancing the system for adjudication and processing of asylum seekers and refugee management. And to facilitate the efficient movement of bona fide travelers to support national interests and priorities, and to prevent and prohibit the movement of undesired persons in the interest of national security, what we want to look at is the physical infrastructure at all ports of entry improved to comply with the prescribed infrastructure standards. Chair, we've received 110 million in our budget for the improvement of the infrastructure at the ports of entry as the Department of Home Affairs. Though that money is not allocated in the department, it's with the Department of Public Works. So now there is a meeting now which we're arranging between the two ministers to make sure that we sign a service level agreement so that we can ensure that those houses we need to renovate, the offices which need to be improved, all that we do that within that 110 million as well as our maritime. So there is money which has been given for us in the budget of 2010. In total of the MTF period is 400 million. Chair, we looked at this target in terms of contribution towards realizing a positive skills migration trend of around 50,000 migrants annually. Really, what we want to look at here, because we're working now on the finalizing the regulations, is the movement of skilled migrants into the country facilitated through issuance of critical skills permits. And then in terms of transforming the culture of organization in support of security, which is what was said, this is really what one of the priorities which we want to look at it, is for us to really reposition the learning academy to inculcate a culture of constant learning, security and service in the department. So that's starting now with that group of 271 employees, but one now as a department to make sure that the pillar for our transformation as a department is the learning academy. We need to look at effective leadership on people management practices and service delivery implemented. It's what we were talking about last time, that we will be looking at the coaching, which now already been appointed, and make sure that management are attending leadership course, and see that the department, the more we've got people who are skilled, is the better that the department will operate. We look at a qualified and versatile cadre developed with values and talents that improve service delivery, combats corruption, enhances the security of the country. Home Affairs is in the paradigm shift of moving from being a service delivery only, but to be a security department, yes, with a component of service delivery. In terms of making sure that ethical conduct and zero tolerance approach to corruption, a counter-corruption strategy for Home Affairs will ensure that it is implemented. Misconduct cases addressed to improve turnaround times for finalization of the cases. So in terms of obtaining a clean audit report, our output is financial and performance information system compliant with Public Finance Management Act and other relevant prescripts, ensuring that compliance is ensured with the settlement of valid invoices within prescribed time frames of the receipt and approval. So in our target on this one, we are clear that 100% of the invoices must be paid within 30 days. So that is our target. We couldn't have anything less. The minister was saying to us, she cannot sit with us and agree to break the law, because the law is saying invoices must be paid within 30 days. So we can't have a target which is less than that. So now we're putting processes in the department to make sure that invoices will be paid within 30 days. And we want to make sure that the management and control over collection of revenue for all civics and immigration income generated products are ensured. So this is one of the key vitals for the department to deliver. We need to ensure a secure, effective, and efficient, accessible service delivery to the clients. So, Chair, we are looking at increasing our accessibility through the refurbishment of offices, opening new offices, including the leases, and development and implementation of a strategy to improve access to DSA services. We want to make sure that products and services rendered within the specified time frames. In our plan, we are clear, Chair, in terms of targets to say this product must be delivered within 54 days, this one must be delivered within 6 days. We really want to make sure that we get into that. We want to make sure that the flow of customers is improved in frontline offices through the implementation of electronic queue management system. So in summary, what are our strategic focus going forward? So we're saying, Chair, in this plan, we are really focusing on major issues. Is the one we said, Chair, is the transformation of the department, which is embedded on the development of a cadre and the leadership that is security conscious, professional, caring, and responsive to the needs of all South Africans. If we achieve that, then we'll be able to take the department forward. It's the modernization of our systems. Want to build a secure, integrated platform of systems and processes that will enable a secure and effective national identity system and immigration system. I'm still going to come on another slide just in terms of what are those projects. We need to prioritize establishing secure, responsive, and effective immigration. As the minister indicated in her last budget speech, that now want to focus on immigration. We think, yes, on the civil side, we've turned the corner, but we still need to maintain and make sure that we don't slide back from there. So we need to establish sound immigration policy and legislation, put in place secure, effective, and efficient immigration processes and system, engage stakeholders proactively and effectively, domestically and international, strong focus on capacity development and border environment and in seaports in particular. In terms of this transformation, I think I'll be repeating because it's what we have already said in terms of what we have done in the OR Tambo, our learning academy. The important part, Chair, is the issue now of the cadet program. We were looking, Chair, on something to say for home affairs. Then we come up with a process of saying before people, they go into our service points, be either in civics or immigration, they can undergo first a training. We're looking at something where we will appoint people without in the department. They go through that program, they get trained. If we have recruited 50 and then 40 of them pass, then they will be appointed in the department. If the 40 fails, they were given an opportunity, then they will go in other areas. So it's something which we want to look at it to make sure that we get appropriate skills for the department. And mentoring and coaching I already talked about, and the issue you know, of us to making sure that our organizational model is really based on the principle that managers are empowered and they are held accountable for their responsibilities. So on the modernization, I've already said that is one of the areas which we want to look at. And I know that in the previous week, our CIO did come and present in terms of what these projects are all about. But Chair, we are finalizing now that definitive agreement with Kijima, so that now 1st of April we'll be rolling out these processes. We've already started our steer core meetings every week to make sure that this thing is managed properly. And in it, we've already, within IT, we'll be creating a program office with the experts of project management to make sure that this project is managed properly. We've learned lessons from the first process, so we need to make sure that we are doing it in a manner that it won't go back to that issue. Well, Chair, in terms of this immigration, we were saying, Chair, we really want to strengthen of the ports of entry. As I said, that we have received in total 400 million, but in the year, that's what now we'll be using, it's 110, now we put around 110, is what we'll be using now in terms of the upgrade for that. We will be on transforming the permitting regime. Our goal, they say, is the flexible and responsive and use immigration to advance South Africa's development agenda without compromising security. And then we'll be making sure in terms of the transformation of asylum seeker and refugee management and continue with our process of finalizing the immigration policy. That's on the strategy side. So China, I'll hand over to the CFO on the figure side, and then thereafter, if Chair permits, and take any questions as I indicated. So.
Thank you, DG. Honourable members, I'm sure we will follow the same procedure we do every time, that of allowing the CFO to also make a presentation and ask questions after the two presentations are made. Over to you, CFO.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. The presentation will cover the planning and budgeting process that we followed in coming with the amount that we submitted to National Treasury. We also wanted to show the committee what were the additional funding requirements that we requested for the MTF period and what was the DHA allocation over the MTF period. We're also going to look at the budget allocation, comparing the past year with 2012-13. We are also going to look at the budget allocation per programs to make sure that it talks to the annual performance plan. We're also going to then talk about the budget allocation per province and then we'll look at the estimates of national expenditure and any challenges that we are envisaging for the next financial year. Okay. The planning and budgeting process started with the development of the strategic plan or the annual performance plans, which covers the 3-year medium-term expenditure framework. The plans were then broken down into the 3 years, which is then called the annual performance plan. Once the planning cycle was completed, we then started with the budgeting process to make sure that everything that is included in the strategic plan is budgeted for. The costing assumptions or analysis that we've used for compensation of employees, we've made sure that every employee that is currently within the department is properly budgeted for, and we then increased that with the incremental budget approach, which was provided by National Treasury. In this instance, they mentioned that it's 5% overall for all the employees. And also, we've made sure that all our contractual obligations, specifically leases and security, they are also calculated with the escalation clauses, because we've got contracts and those contracts have got escalation clauses. Other operating costs like telephones, it was calculated using the incremental budget approach. All other expenditures, we budgeted them using a zero-based budgeting. Once that costing was complete, we then submitted our budget request to National Treasury for funding of our plan. And for the MTEF 2012-13 to 2014-15, the department requested the following amount, and it will also show what was the allocation from Treasury. We requested a baseline allocation was given to us to say for the 12-13 we've got 5.2 billion, for 13-14 5.8 billion, 14-15 6 billion. Then we requested additional funds as those the breakdown of the additional requests I'll present it in the next slide. We had requested 513 million for 12-13, and for 13-14 we requested 1.2 billion. For 14-15 we requested 1.2 billion. What was allocated from Treasury for our vote was 5.5269 billion for our operating expenses, current payments, and compensation of employees. As DG mentioned in his presentation, we were also allocated specifically for the border post infrastructure. We were allocated 400 million over the MTEF period. This amount is sitting in DPW's budget because they are responsible for the infrastructure of government. The budget, I'm sure members are asking, you requested 513 million, but you didn't get that money. How then are you going to make sure that all the activities under the strategic plan or the annual performance plan are funded? We had to then go through an exercise of reprioritizing our budget to make sure that all priorities that we have included in the strategic plan is funded within the above allocation that we were given. These were the amounts that we requested from Treasury. We wanted money for retraining of immigration and civic officials on security awareness. We wanted funding for security upgrade. We also wanted funding for profiling of border community immigrants and strengthening stakeholder forums. We specifically wanted money for advanced passenger processing system because we've got contractual obligations. We also wanted to increase our capacity specifically for immigration affairs in order to deal with the new Refugee Amendment Act. We also wanted capacity for counter-corruption, 19 positions. We also wanted funding for financial management improvement, specifically in the provinces, because that's where the transactions get generated. We wanted more money for deportation. The more your laws and regulation are tight, the more you might need to deport people. That was based on that. We requested money for DHA modernization, previously known as WIO, for 13-14, because there was money already in our baseline of 314 million in 12-13, but there wasn't any funding allocated for the outer years. We also requested money to create capacity for effective and efficient maritime ports and border management. We also requested money for the implementation of a new model for effective and efficient refugee status determination, relocation of refugee reception offices towards the borderline, law enforcement, monitoring and compliance, so that we can improve our systems in terms of records, turn rail station into proper ports of entry, and also improve tracing and analysis functions. Specifically, this was for the border management. We also wanted additional funding for the expansion of the OR Tambo, similar to what we have done, where we replaced almost everyone at OR Tambo. We wanted to then roll out that to other ports of entry. We also requested money for the rollout of the smart card. So those were the totals that were requested, and in the previous slide I then mentioned what was given. This slide just make a comparison between the different years in terms of the programs, how what is the change or what is the increase or decrease. Our budget for 2011-12, overall it was 5.8 billion, and the allocation for 12-13 is 5.2 billion. There is a decrease of 10%. The 10% decrease, the major contributors to the decrease, it relates to a once-off funding from National Treasury to cover the shortfall in the production of cost of passports, which was 327 million, as well as 234 million decrease in IT modernization. Last year we were given 548 million for WIO due to the settlement with Kijima. This year only 314 million was allocated. The passport specifically, we've had engagement with National Treasury, and the solution was that we need to establish a trading account. We have done that. We've established the trading account. It's going to be functioning from 1st of April. What it means is that all revenue that we collect for passports, we are not going to surrender that money to National Treasury. We'll be using that money to defray the expenses relating to the printing of the passport. Then in 2013-14, our budget has increased by 15%. In 2014-15, it increased by 4%. If we then look at the economic classification, how is the amount divided? We have in 12-13, we've been allocated for compensation of employees. We've got 2.3 billion, and that equates to total funded position of 9,829 funded positions. Then we've got goods and services of 1,915, and then which ties to total current payments of 4.2. We then have transfer to municipalities. This is mainly for our licensing of vehicles, which is 1.3 million. We also have public entities that report to our minister, IEC, GPW, and Film and Publication Board. Their budget is 960 million. We also have budget for transfers to households, which is 1.5 million. Overall, our budget ties back to what we were allocated of 5.2 billion. And then for 2013-14 is then 6.2 billion, and 14-15 is 6.5 billion. thing that I need to mention, which is important, is that the department is reprioritizing its budget to ensure that the sea and airports of entry are adequately capacitated. So from the 9,829 position, DG has already mentioned how many of those positions are filled. For the ones that are vacant funded, we are going to reprioritize them to make sure that the sea and the ports of entry are adequately capacitated. We then wanted to just show the committee what is our operational budget if we take out the amount that is earmarked. Our baseline amount is 5,296,269. If we left the earmarked funds, which will be the funding for the public entities and the IT modernization, we are then left with 4,020 billion. Then we've got a bit of a blow because the unauthorized expenditure that relates to 2005-06, which is 53 million in percentage, it equates to 4.5% of our budget. We are supposed to, the amount was approved without funding by SCOPA. What it means is that our budget is going to be reduced by this 53 million. Then we needed to reprioritize our budget to make sure that that 53 million, we reserve it, and also when it's time to return it to Treasury or when our budget is reduced, we are able to do that, and we do not budget funding that is not there, basically. So what we have done in order to distribute this equitably among everyone or among all the programs, we've actually decided that the 4.5%, the budget of each and every unit, except the provinces, will be cut by 4.5%. So that's what we have done, and that's what we're going to be making sure that when it's time, when Treasury says we are taking that money, we know if they don't take it this year, it will be, we will be lucky then, we'll then put it back and fund some other unfunded priorities. Also, I've mentioned that in 2012-13, we've been given the 110 million for the border post infrastructure. We have identified which border posts are going to be refurbished, specifically the residential accommodation of our staff. They were not looking so good, and at least with that money, we will be able to refurbish the houses that they stay in. This pie chart is just to show the committee how is the budget allocated per each program, but specifically with more details. So if we look, 13% of the budget, of the overall budget, is for administration. We then divided how much specifically is for information services, specifically for WIO. We've got 12%. We also then have office accommodation, which is sitting at 6%. We've got citizen affairs at 9%. That excludes the provinces. We've got public entities 18%, provinces at 31%, and immigration at 11%. I think this shows that we have given the money where it's supposed to be, the provinces. That's why they've got 31%. This is just to show between the different provinces how much is allocated. I should just mention that we are reviewing this because we need to look how many offices are in each province and how many population are they saving and how many kilometers or however, I don't know, they call it space in the whole province. So we are looking at that to make sure that that is equitable. We don't get Gauteng getting all the money and the other provinces not getting the money. So we've got Eastern Cape at 13%. We've got Free State at 8%. Gauteng, obviously there are more people in Gauteng, at sitting at 22%. We've got KwaZulu-Natal sitting at 12%. Limpopo, 13%. Mpumalanga, 9%. Northwest, 9%, Northern Cape 5%, and Western Cape at 9%. So I'm sure everyone is looking where they come from. Is it properly budgeted for? This is quite small, but we wanted to show the committee in terms of rent value how much is allocated to each unit within the department. So ministry administration for compensation of employees, we've got 345 million, and those are the units that fall under administration program, ministry, management, support services, which will be the DG and the chief directories that report to him, corporate services, which will be communication, counter corruption, human resources, learning academy, financial administration, government, motor, transport. And we also then show how much is allocated for transversal IT management, which will be the 529. Included in that 529 million is the 314 million for IT modernization. We also have 339 million for office accommodation. This slide then shows the civic affairs, including the provinces. So provinces have been allocated an amount of 139 million for goods and services, and there's a breakdown in each and every province how much is that. And for compensation of employees, they've been allocated 1.5 billion. This is immigration affairs budget. For compensation of employees, overall they've got 280 million. For goods and services, 273 million, which equals to 54 million for total current payments and fuel transfers to households transferred to households and departmental agents. What are the few challenges that we are experiencing, which we believe they are under our control, but we need to just manage them properly? We've got insufficient funding for the advanced passenger processing. Only 50 million is allocated, but if members can go back, we requested 143 million for 2012-13. We are engaging with National Treasury in order to see how we can fund this shortfall in terms of the advanced passenger processing system. The implementation of the border post infrastructure, it has to be done with DPW, and obviously there might not be capacity within DPW to assist us with that. We see this as a challenge. That's why we want to make sure that there are processes in place to make sure that we do spend that money, because we do need, that's why we requested it. We needed the money for the border post infrastructure. We still have a challenge. I've already mentioned the inadequate capacity within the sea and the ports of entry, which we are reprioritizing our position, our post, to make sure that those areas are adequately capacitated in terms of human resources. Financial management capacity, both skills and human resources, is still a challenge. Members will remember that we appointed 9 finance directors, one for each province, and those people need to have people under them to assist them with financial management processes, if in line with the fact that we are going to decentralize the procurement and payment function. Thank you very much, and sorry for my voice.
Thank you, CFO. Honorable members, the floor is yours. I notice Honorable Marcella, Honorable McIntosh, Honorable Maduna Peterson,
Honorable Kwekana, Honorable Bothman, Honorable De Freitas, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, let me appreciate the manner in which the presentation has been conducted. It's well thought of, well structured, and very much informative. Chair, in light of what has been achieved by the department and given also the target and the strategic plan, I think the challenges are clear. For instance, if you look on page 12, Chair, is that I wanted to understand if you look about, if you talk about stakeholder forums, have you addressed the far-flung areas in all provinces? I remember when we did the oversight, it was reported to us in Northwest and in particular Northwest, yes, where it was reported to us that the stakeholder forums have been established for the villages and other areas, but to other provinces, to what extent have you managed to establish beyond the cities and towns so that we reach out to the areas where we need to attend at the most? On page 14, the person needs to understand whether this Zimbabwean dispensation process which the department has undertaken in the past year or so, are we going to have another program to attend the more than the other members, other citizens, besides the 275,000 that the department has managed to reach out to? Because if you leave that to sort out itself, we are going to have a situation where this project becomes a project that really has not achieved its objectives. And also, Chair, one needs to ask oneself whether or not it is important to look at other nationalities instead of only focusing on the one that we have addressed, which is, in this case, Zimbabwe only. Because, for instance, the Somalians, Bangladeshis, and others, as you go to the mainland center, you will find that the chaos is not necessarily with the Zimbabweans now, but also others are also seeking attention, which we need to look into that. Chairperson, on page 18 and 42, I will just talk to those. I wanted to understand, in fact, I need to perhaps be made aware of anything that I don't understand about the local offices. If the local offices is the ones that are at the very local level, you'll find that there's no capacity to, in those offices. You will remember when we went to Free State in Tabanj, for instance. The office was supposed to be an office, but you could see that it is far from being an office. There is no proper recording, there is no proper documentation, there is lack of capacity, the staff, personnel that are deployed there, and those we raise in the department. But now this kind of optimism to give everything to them at that level, Mr. DG, through you, Chair, I would like to be made and, you know, to be convinced that there is enough capacity that will be given at that level to make sure that things are working fast, efficient, and obviously we can respond to the citizens as the time required in order to ensure that we deliver the basic services to all of them. The last one, Chair, on this one was the financial report as well. The last one is the page 42. What's going on there? Yeah, on page 42, we always see and we read on the reports that we're dealing with the corrupt officials and those that are misbehaving, dealing with the issues of disciplinary hearings and so forth and so forth. But the challenge is we have not seen successful prosecutions within the criminal justice system, where a person is found guilty of stealing money from the public purse. Then you deal with the person in the same way as the person that steals on the street. But you'll find that we simply get reports that, yeah, we've dealt with this successfully within the systems of the department, within the Labor Relations Act. But then we do not bring that element of the criminal justice system, thereby ensuring that there's successful prosecution, as that will act as a deterrent, Chairperson. And I would say that the Cuban system, in this case, Mr. Titi, would be very good for us in this country. If you steal 5,000, then you get the maximum sentence, like the one who steals 20 million, so that nobody will steal from the money that should serve our people in building houses, giving them health services, and so forth. The last Chairperson is on the budget. May I go into that one too? Or we take the second round?
No, we'll take the second round.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much.
Honorable McIntosh.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the department for a few good presentations. Just for the portfolio committee's interest in this report, I see there are 14 photographs of the minister and 12 of the deputy minister, but only 7 of the anyway, it's good to see that we've got
active ministers who move around and they are on the go and at DG. Madam Chairman, I've got one question on page 14 of the DG's presentation on the hospital registration. The one is related to babies who are registered. How does one do it if a baby dies within 2 or 3 years or even a few months? Is there a death certificate that issued? I'd be interested to know how they process that. The second question is the staff at these hospitals. I don't imagine that it will take too long to do the birth, do the online registration. Do we have full-time staff, or do we have people who, as it were, nurses or administrative people who are paid, say, to handle these, rather than having a office where the employee doesn't have a full-time job, as it were, or enough work to keep them full. And then on page 13, and maybe the CFO wants to answer this question, the fingerprinting and the linking to the banks and so on is according to the report from the DG, going to be a source of income, which is good, I think. But I'd like to know if it's going to go into the trading account as well, and if there's been an estimate yet of what kind of income will be generated once this is operational. Then on page 15, we see a reference to the arrival of the Cubans, and we also know that there's been a complete clean out of the immigration officials at Ortia, or Tambo, and it all sounds very interesting, but maybe the DG would feel free, or he hinted at it, to explain what this mess-up was with the Nigerians and their yellow fever certificates, and whether it was whether there can be more liaison. Let me hasten to add, I don't think it matters if we have strict border enforcements, but I then think they should be consistently applied and done so that it doesn't cause us embarrassment. The final one is on page 47. The DG talks about under the first bullet point, the principles apply in the training of the 350 immigration officials that have been deployed to our Tambo will be adapted and rolled out to train all officials of the department. Perhaps you could just, the DG could share with us what are those principles that were applied in this training camp away in the Northern Cape. Thank you very much.
Honorable Peterson Madonna.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to thank also the department for the presentation they just gave. I just want to know from the department, in the move from 14 to 11 strategic objectives and more targets, what has shifted from previous years? And then my second one, what is the relation between the settlement amount of 835 million and the 321 classified as unauthorized expenditure? And then my third one, how will the department increase capacity with only 3% real increase in compensation to employees? And then I just want to come to this issue of disability, which really is disappointing that this issue is not being taken seriously by all departments. I just want to know really what is the problem here, because I don't want to be told that these people didn't come. I just want to know the real problem, really, why is this issue not being taken seriously. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Khatkan.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I made this comment last year, and I'm making it again. You know, what is good about the Department of Home Affairs, we as the Portfolio Committee feel as if we are part of the department. We are taken through thoroughly, and, you know, the jargon is so familiar that as if we are part of the staff, you know, I want to commend the department for that. And also, I also commented on the issue of the CFO, that is a woman. You make us proud, and your presentation make us proud as women. Keep it up. I know when you are, sometimes you feel threatened if you are the only, you are only two amongst men in that department. So be strong, ladies, and keep it up. We are there to support you. Thank you, Chair. Chair, you know, I'm also interested on the issue of the Nigerian nationals that were held back. If the DG could at least elaborate on that more. And also the issue that was raised by Honorable Marcella, I would like to say to that point, if they, when they prioritize the offices for establishment, if the the cabinet office could be the priority. And another thing, there was, I can't remember which border post, where was a structure fully completed of the offices, but because the Department of Public Works did not speak to the to Home Affairs and the people that are at the border post, the other departments, as a result, the structure is standing there, is not utilized because there was something wrong that was done wrong inside, whatever. What happened to that structure? What are the plans for that particular structure as well? Secondly, I would like to know, when you talk about the cadet program, in your recruitment drive, are you taking consideration of the disabled people? Because I think that is the one way that you can raise your number for the disabled. You can try and reach 2% of the disabled person within your department. I wonder if on your recruitment drive you do prioritize the disabled people to be part and parcel. And also on your 50-50 gender parity, there is no explanation on how you are going to reach out to the 50-50 gender parity. And it's worrying, honestly, every time you come here, you come as the management that sends you with this, but with two ladies. More female women coming in as part of your structure as well. I think, Chair, if you could get the last one, Chair, it's about the Zimbabwe.
the Zimbabwean, if we could get more clarity, how did it happen? Because there are duplications or whatever. I'm not sure what happened. If we could get clarity on that particular one as well. Thank you, as Chair. I think that's the last one.
Honorable Bosman.
Chair, I think looking at the areas that have been ring-fenced, for the improved office accommodation and residential standards, I would agree 100% with Honorable Iki in terms of the Tabanchu office, which is not included here. And Chair, I had made it a request, I think, to the DG last, that people are actually being serviced in a container at Khanyesa. And you are saying they must still be served there for another year because it's not included here as well. Chair, the other thing that we would want to raise is on the issue of the ID smart card pilot with population of 2,000. I think that is the rollout we are proposing that we're going to do in 2012 financial year. But when you get to the finances, it's budget at zero. I'm not sure the explanation there. If you look at your budget, unfortunately we are unable to, because I heard the chair saying we'll deal with the budget later. To me, we need to read the strat plan together with the budget, whether they talk one language. Mm-hmm. Now, the ID smart card pilot with population of 2,000 is under this the new financial year 2012-2013. But under the same financial year, the budget for ID smart card rollout is zero. So I want to know as to how are we going to do it without finances that are provided for. Chair, when you look at the budget again, you have assets, but you don't see provisions for the depreciation of those assets. So we're not sure as to why is it not included there, together with the provisions for bad debts. I understand there are some people who would be owing, as we go for the oversight, we picked up that some people have been fined, but at the end of the day, they don't pay. They'd rather change their names or whatever from their country of origin. You also have trainings that are going to run in terms of the new recruits. The new recruits and the recruits that are, I think this defense, whatever, transfer there. But there's a training that you see is going to run. If you look, we are taking from our own budget, which is fine. But I want to check as to what is happening with our skills development levy. Because I don't see it being registered, because we need that 1%. And that is the one that has to be distributed in terms of doing the whole thing. I've tried to add, but it doesn't bring me to the 1%, whatever the trainings that are going to be done. And also the interrelation between us and the Department of Higher Education in terms of skills development. Chair, the IT rollout, we had a presentation last. It's going to be done in phases, if I remember well, which is three phases. And Chair, the only thing we missed, I think, last is to say the how part, you know, to we understood the infrastructure itself, how it's going to be done, but who are the people that are going to do the whole thing? What target group are we looking at? Maybe that's something that we have to check.
We also, last year, we ran a series of meetings here in the committee where we were talking about the educational part, Home Affairs educating the community out there in terms of what they are doing, so that communities go there knowing exactly what is it that is needed from them or is expected. I don't see the budget saying anything around that. And Chair, we've seen the third quarter, I think the presentation we had up to so far is the third quarter expenditure, where a lot of money, in fact all the provinces, money was taken away from those provinces because we could foresee that particular amount is not going to be spent. And I think it was then taken to another thing to be done. And again, we are distributing this particular amount. But as we talk about the number of population, the number of offices and services that we have there, do we consider the vastness of the provinces as well? I know you spoke about the geographical spread and all that, but as you do the calculation, do we really, because if you look at Northern Cape, it's very small in terms of the population. But in terms of the where you get things, you access things, and you interact with the society, then you have a vast, they travel about 1,000 kilometers at times. I don't know whether you see the rule. But those are the things that you need to do. I see we've spoken about the unauthorized expenditure. And it's a lot of money, I'm worried. But I think we need to also say, which is something that I did not pick up, what is our policy in terms of all these things? What have we in place so that we don't get these kind of things repeating themselves again? And I think, Chair, okay, the last thing that I picked up is the issue of maintenance, the way it is. The way it has been written, the maintenance is divided, I think, into four different groupings. So you don't understand as to why you have that, because the four split makes us have more budget around maintenance. We're not even aware whether we're still maintaining the same buildings or the same offices or whatever. That's another thing, which we do not know whether it should be. See, these things are tricking us, especially as politicians, where you would find that as Home Affairs, we have budgeted for maintenance of our offices. Public Works as well has budgeted to do the same. So at the end of the day, you lose out in between what is actually happening. So we need to understand all those things. And lastly, Chair, I've requested the Rural Home Affairs officers to be introduced, basically because of the nature of the country that we have, where in the rural areas you find that the ownership of land is in the hands of chiefs. And the traditional leaders, what they normally do, when somebody dies today, they just allocate land, a grave. And at times it's not now registered. Who reports to Home Affairs? Who makes Home Affairs aware that there's something that has happened there at the village? And these people, because everything is far away from them, they've decided to bury immediately within 3-4 weeks. Same thing with the child, if that particular child is born. Sometimes it's born, they don't take that child to the clinic or the lady to the clinic. You end up having a child that is not registered, and yet we have put up the 30-day deadline for registration. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Jeffreters, please don't take the example of Honorable Bosman.
Thank you, Chair. I'll try and be as quick as possible. First of all, thank you both to the DG and the CFO for very comprehensive presentations. Thank you very much. And as you know, I'm the newbie in the committee, so these may be questions that are very elementary. A lot of the questions that I did have been asked, so I won't repeat those. I just wanted just to, on page 9 of the DG's presentation, where he talks about this adjudication process with regards a process using a screening committee and so forth, and it talks, I'm presuming it's talking about the late registration of births. If you could just perhaps unpack that. This is maybe a silly thing to say, but so what if it's late, if it's beyond 30 days, if the parent comes and registers the next week? What is the big issue? What am I missing? And then just the next slide, number page 10, how many, did I hear you correctly in SADG that there are a total of 375 hospitals countrywide? I think that's the figure you used. And if that's the case, then we're not doing too badly. Am I right in saying that? Because then... So I just want to just confirm that it's 375 hospitals in total, and we're at 354. I just want to just understand it. And then on page 11, the mobile units, I'm trying to understand the figures. For example, I'll just take randomly an example. The first one, Eastern Cape, it says there's 17 units, yet you've only got 16 staff. So I'm trying to understand. You said that in your presentation you don't want to have just a driver. So that's the first aspect. And then secondly, there's less staff than units. So if you could just explain how that works. Is it that there is a unit that sort of sits and doesn't get used occasionally? How does it work? Well, how is it that some staff figures are less than the actual units? Then on page 12, you talk about stakeholder forums. Could I just ask, how is the efficiency and effectiveness of these forums measured? It's great to have the numbers, but are we making sure that these forums are effective and functioning as optimally as possible so that we benefit as Home Affairs? And then I just wanted to ask on the first bullet point on your page 14, you talked about centralizing visa applications. When did centralization happen, and is it working? Is the centralization, is it being more efficient? Are these processes, these applications being processed quickly as compared to before? And then on your page 16, again, might be a silly elementary question. You talk on your third bullet point to South African National Defence Force people that have been trained and deployed. Why specifically SANDF people? Why not people that you recruited within Home Affairs, for example, or whatever? What would be the reason to use SANDF people? Then on your slide 26, you list the disciplinary cases. What are the kind of cases that you came across? What were the outcomes of a lot of these cases? I mean, obviously you can't go into every specific, but just generally, what were the issues that arose? And I see there's improvement. Have you undertaken studies just to see, how to reduce these disciplinary cases? So obviously you want to reduce that. Then your page 28. Gee, I'm rushing as fast as I can. This may be a weird question. Your second bullet point says that you want officials to be patriotic. How do you judge that someone's patriotic? I mean, I can understand that someone's vigilant and caring and professional and so forth. How would you judge somebody patriotic? It may be a weird question, but it just fascinates me. Then that's been asked. And then, Chair, am I right in saying that we'll be asking questions later on the other presentation?
Yeah, I thought we were going to ask take a second round and deal with finances, but other members have already asked questions on that. It's not a problem. We will have a second round of hands. But before the department responds, I just want to follow up on what the Honorable Khoipana raised with regard to Libombo building in Libombo, a building of, was it Home Affairs? Yes, between Home Affairs and Department of Public Works. If I remember well, that building costs about 65 million, and it's a beautiful structure. But that building does not suit the interest of Home Affairs, because I'm told it's vice versa. The queues are supposed to be on the other side, but they were not made that way. They were on the other way. And the Department of Home Affairs in Lebombo, the officials have tried several times to raise the issue with the Department of Public Works, but the Department of Public Works is not willing to address that problem. DG, I think 65 million is a lot of money. And if you look at that structure, it's beautiful. The only thing is standing there as a white elephant unused because of misunderstandings between the two departments. And this worries us when we hear that 110 million is allocated to the Home Affairs via public works, as to are we going to experience the same problem? Could you please DG, follow up on that? Time for you to respond to the questions that are raised and comment, DG, and your team, of course, not you alone.
No, thanks very much, Chair, and as well as the comment from the members that the presentation makes us to work more so that we can be able to make sure that the committees get, we are transparent, we are not hiding anything, because we know by doing that is going to help us to get proper guidance and change things in the department. So we really appreciate that. Chair, let me start with your question about the Lebombo and then the public works. Chair, Lebombo firstly was built for what we're going to call as one-stop border post. That has been the intention for that building. And what this means is that if you go to Lebombo, 7 kilometers in the South African land, we need to clear the trucks and buses. And then when you come on the Mozambique side, 5 kilometers, they're supposed to clear the trucks and buses. Then there is a road which goes on the side. Then those will just go straight without going again into the, in front of immigration officer, because they've been cleared at the 7 and the 5 kilometers. Then you only deal with the people. Because if you go to Lebombo now, the congestion which is there is because of those trucks. So that has been intentional. Now, what is the issue now? That there is an agreement which is in front of Parliament for that one-stop border post agreement. Mozambicans have signed, have done everything. So the issue is on our side. So SARS has been trying to deal with this issue. But there's still one matter which we are still dealing with it, which maybe is what is causing the problem at the portfolio committee level. Police have got an issue. Their issue is, once you get a stamp on that 7 kilometers point, and something happens between the 7 kilometer and the port of entry, they don't have a jurisdiction now, because that person legally has exited the country. So there are still those technicalities which we are still trying to work around, because police are saying, even they said there was a case where they arrested somebody who was stolen a car, was cleared there. Now when they arrested that person, that matter was taken to court. Actually, the magistrate was saying, we have kidnapped that person as a South African, because that person has already exited your country, you can't arrest. So it's what then is still being sorted out. It's one of the issues which are there. However, with the public works, we have been working now with them in terms of saying, whilst that is the issue, we need to finalize the issue of the buildings.
as it can be utilized by Home Affairs and the Mozambicans. But the building is rent, whether there is still that issue in terms of the legalities. So it's something which we've put in front of Public Works. But it's, it's something which is a public knowledge, that there are still challenges within Public Works. Not that these issues are not raised. Coming even on the matter, which you said the 110 now is with the Public Works, has the ministers arranged a meeting now with the Minister of Public Works so that they can sit together and come up with a clear memorandum of understanding on how to deal with that amount? But the challenge is still there, because you can have that document, but it doesn't mean that it's going to be implemented, because you need officials from Public Works to be able to deal with that matter. Hence, when the minister was responding to one of the parliamentary questions, said, no, we must put it clear that this dependence of Public Works is there, and it can have that effect on the project. But here we hope that when the minister gets seats with the Minister of Public Works, there would be something in writing which would compel Public Works to deal with the issues. In fact, in Libombo, SARS, which is always getting these things also for those kind of problems, SARS were even asking Public Works why they can't do that work which is left in order for Libombo to operate. But once you do that, the Auditor General, the Public Protector is going to say to you, why, how did you do that work? Because it's not belongs to you. So SARS could not continue with that work, because if they do that, they're going to have to answer another question now, which is different to the one of, say, but the unit now at least is operating. So that's where we are, Chair, with the Libombo building. So it's those issues which we say something needs to still be looked at in terms of how can certain functions probably be decentralized from Public Works to the departments, but we are not yet there. Okay, Chair, let me go to the questions. Then now what we want to be doing is that now, colleagues, the question I did not answer, Mr. Mkhize and CFO and Avril, they will respond on those questions which I did not respond on them. But that was the question to them. Let's start with the issue of stakeholder forums in terms of the rural areas. That's the one I'm saying Mr. Mkhize will respond to. The issue of the Zimbabwean project. No, there's no other project for Zimbabwe which will ever come. It's not there. Why? Because all the Zimbabweans who were in our country illegally were given an opportunity by December 2010 to come forward and register. And the message was clear that anyone else who comes illegally in the country, we cannot continue saying you will come illegally to our country in 2015, we'll have a project for you in 2025. No. So that project will never again come for Zimbabweans. We'll deal with the 275. Anyone else who have come after that process, whereas the legal process in the country to come in, there is no way that we can continue that. So that's what we'll do with the Zimbabweans. With the other nationals, ministers want to consider that, yes, there are other nationals which have been in the country in the same position with the Zimbabweans, but what we have learned now from the Zimbabweans is what the minister is going to look and announce what would be the next national. So that is going to happen in the one of looking at the other nationals. So that is coming. Local offices. I think that is a valid point. That's why this we are talking about a phase-in approach to say, really, what we are looking, even if you take what we are doing in the ports of entry, there's nothing which frustrates a customer than selling in the office and then you see cubicles empty. Because if those cubicles have got people, it's fine, you can wait, because that is the capacity which is there. But there's nothing which frustrates. Than you're standing here, you can see, but there are three counters there, but there's only one person. So ultimately, our goal is to make sure that all the cubicles in an office must be filled so that now people can be serviced. That's why now when we're dealing with the mobile offices, it's exactly what we picked it up, because now on the day when that mobile office has to go out, they were taking people from the counters and go with the mobile office. Then said, what capacity have increased? It's not. Because now by the day I'm going to the office, there are no people, the trucks are serving people outside. So the intention is that ultimately we'll get to that. But yet the automation is going to assist us as well of the new project. Because the system will going to have a capability of people applying online. So that means that we're going to reduce the number of people coming to the Office of Home Affairs, like SARS. Because remember, we're doing this thing together with SARS. So SARS has got e-filing on tax. They said, no, on those days, you've got only those people who cannot have the systems, but the rest are not. So in Home Affairs, once that system is in place, the only time we're going to need the people who've got those facilities would be only to come and take a fingerprint, because we need you that fingerprint. Fingerprint photo, and that's all, and you leave the office. But not like now where you go with the form, even the form you get it in the office, you must fill it there and all that. So that is going to assist us. So the capacity is really an issue which we are looking at. Even you know, with the decentralization, that's why now from the headquarters this year, 12-13, we are only targeting provincial offices. So that we start there. Then thereafter, after a period, we'll be going to other offices until ultimately we get all the offices. So it's going to be in a phased-in approach to make sure that people are not just loaded with the work without. So we are something which we are really working hard on it, so that now we make sure that when we do that allocation of posts, we really look at the offices and say, for us, was one of the yardstick we are using was the one it says people are working on a shift basis because of the Saturdays. So we were saying, one, firstly, a yardstick which will say at least an individual must work one Saturday in a month, at least. So now what we do now, we take those offices and say, in this one, people now are working 3 Saturdays in a week. But in this one, they're already working one. Therefore, when we capacitate, we don't give to that one, we give to those which are still at that level. So it's something which we are really working it on the basis of a phased in approach. Successful prosecution of the cases, that is a huge frustration. Even in the department, we try to come up with a committee where it's chaired by the CFO. Well, you get a situation that you deal with the case at the departmental level, people successful, the case, the person has been fired. 3 years down the line, you find somebody pitching up in the office. I don't know, I've won the case. I'm coming back to work. There is nothing which frustrates me. Unfortunately, that's where people are misinterpreting on this. When we say, it's not that we're saying courts not supposed to be there or want to usurp their powers, that is, but we're saying with the problems you are sitting with, do they appreciate what is the impact of that? When a person was in the office, stolen money, as we said, then on a technicality, which would say, no, you didn't inform this person with this, or don't even understand how, on what basis is a decision like this is taken. But at that time, that person must come back. And what is worse, you must pay that person from that time he or she left the department. So those are the challenges which we are working with. So on this prosecution, I think in the government as a whole, I think is an issue which we are really want to work on it, and people are eager to work on it, but the result on the criminal side is still a challenge. So it's something which we are sitting with at Home Affairs. That's why now we decided to come up with this committee to say, can we make sure that even at that level, when that case is still at the department, it is tight, we are sure that we have looked at everything, so that by the time we take that person through the process, we have already made sure that our case is strong. And when we lose them like that, we
we send it back to that committee. So that committee must look at it and say, why the person who has done ABCDE now was by that process has been sent back to the department. What did not go right in that process? So it's something which we were looking at in terms of the prosecution of the case. I want to the Honorable McIntosh. Well, Mr. Mkiza, we will take some of, but the issue of the child is that if the, that's why we are pushing that the child must be registered within 30 days, which maybe can respond at the same time more or less with the question from Honorable Defrita. Why do we register a child? Why don't we fast? You remember that that birth certificate allows that child have an ID when 16. You can only be registered on a national population register based on that registration of that. Then the major issue is about the planning of the state. How would the state know that in Mpumalanga we need a university? It must be based on that. It must go to the national population register. Say, Mpumalanga as a province has got so many children who've got the potential of after 18 years to be in a university. Yes, they can go and study anywhere. But if the number is able to tell us that after 18 years you should have built a university in Mpumalanga, but if that information is not there, we're going to sit and then on the last hour is then that. So if you know that child died, there is a, it's only when it is still born when that child is not registered. Then in that instance, we are not able to issue now a proper birth certificate. But if that child was registered, also going forward, the statistics of Africa must also know why children in the Eastern Cape, as an example, they die between the age of 0 to that 30 days. So we need to, so it's done for a lot of variety of reasons. Besides the social economic issues like that, that child will be able to get a grant and all that. So we need to make sure that they are registered and so it's ready for this. Full-time staff within hospitals, we have that, maybe Mr. Mkiza will give the detail, that we targeted the big hospital. So when we're doing that, spreadsheet, we should have done the one of the hospitals as well. So we've got Mr. Mkiza, we can give just what numbers do we have. Sefo will report, respond on the yellow fever. No, sorry, on the source of income. No, she ran away. Okay, on the source of income for revenues. Let me deal with the Nigerian issue. This is a matter which is very sensitive. The cabinet, yesterday I was in a meeting where the cabinet has appointed the cabinet ministers to look at this matter, what has been the issues. As I've indicated, that at a point of entry is something which we really want to work on in terms of who must lead at a point of entry, so to make sure that there's someone who is responsible in leading that issue. So as it stands, is on the public knowledge to say, no, as this was the matter of the Department of Health. There are countries, there are about 53 countries in the world which are in the category of yellow fever region. I don't know how they will come up, but there is a list of those countries from the WHO. Out of that 53 countries, it's more Africa and South America, which means that number of 53. And based on that, there's a universal understanding. It's not a protocol, but it's a universal understanding that if you are traveling from that country, you must produce a yellow fever certificate. And then that yellow fever certificate is for 10 years. Another issue cannot take a vaccination today and then I travel and I said I've got yellow fever certificate. Then to control that yellow fever certificate, there are clinics which are designated to do that. Therefore, they control that with their batch numbers. So that now this yellow certificate will have this batch number, which will say it's talking to this. And in that birth certificate, it must have, that yellow fever certificate, it must have your ID number, it must have your address, it must have all those kind of things for you. So in this instance now, what happened now, based on that, people at OR Tambo, which is now the port health, is when we're also discussing now to say, who is responsible to see a foreign traveler first, and we must see the foreign traveler last. That is an issue. Now, in terms of these rules, it says when a flight, before you get into a flight in your country of origin, an airliner must make sure that you've got a proper travel document, you've got a yellow fever certificate if you are coming from a region of a yellow fever. Then before that flight, once it closes, they must spray something. I didn't know, I only now know as I'm involved in this thing. There's only the spray, the international flight, which is, I don't like it, but I don't know why people watch up to the end of the flight. So before now a flight leaves, that must be done. The reason is to make sure that if there was a mosquito within that flight, it must be killed. Then once then that plane lands in an airport, between that country of origin to that airport, you are a responsibility of the airliner. You are not a responsibility of anyone. It's the airliner, because it's the one who loaded you there up to this time. Then once then that plane lands, the first people who goes into the airliner, amongst those with those yellow thing, is a health official. The health official must get a certificate from the pilot which says nobody was sick in the plane from the time it moves from that country up to here. Secondly, that spray was sprayed. And now they make sure they must give them the empty tags. If that has not happened, that plane cannot disembark those people. You might even return back. That is the first point. Then if that has happened now, then the doors will be opened and the people will start to disembark. Again, between that door of the aeroplane to the in front of the immigration officer is still the responsibility of the airliner, not of anyone. Then they call that area a sterile area. Then once people are in front of the immigration officer, in OR Tambo, there is a robot. I've never noticed it, but you know, when it was explained, I noticed, oh, there's this thing I never seen. What that equipment does, it checks the temperature of the body. If there's an infrared, once they pick it, that it, I've got a temperature that shows that I'm sick. Because in the plane, the airline, the pilot won't pick that up. If I'm even sick in the stand, that somebody must come. Then Port Health will say, you know, you must go to the Port Health. Then Port Health will look at what kind of disease you have. Then they will issue a certificate to Home Affairs to say, this person must be sent back. Also, at that point, Port Health can look now at the yellow fever certificates. In this instance, is what happened. They looked at the yellow fever certificates of those flights which were coming from Nigeria on that day. And then when they were looking at it, 120, they said, media says 125, but it's 123. Out of that, the 123 is the one now they found out that there are certificates which are not
correct according to the Department of Health. Then as a process, they will issue them now something to the Department of Home Affairs, which says, as Port Health, we've looked at this. Then the role of Home Affairs is to facilitate the movement of those people outside the country, because the authority, which is health, has said these people, they don't have, whether it's a fraudulent or whatever issue they have. So the way we are, you know, is that, as I'm saying, that the ministers are looking at this, so it's still being investigated to check what exactly happened, what was the issue, were those certificates. So I do not know now whether those certificates were really like that. That's why this matter is working now with the ministers. However, our role as Home Affairs in the issue was that once one of the certificate has been issued, for us, we have to facilitate. That's why you know, the ministers are going to work and come back and say how to make sure that this thing is controlled in a manner that it must be managed, and as Home Affairs, we must be able to escalate, if we have to escalate an issue like that and all that. So that's what is being worked on this matter. So that's what has happened. Thanks, then, this issue, what are the principles which we have rolled out? Firstly, the principle we're talking about is the pilot, which said, in OR time, as I indicated, that 350 which we have appointed there is helping us to make sure that for every shift, there are people in the counters. We don't have a counter which is empty. So we want that principle to be kept. Secondly, what we want out of that process, people were thinking that to be an immigration officer, your responsibility is to take a passport and stamp it and go. But now the principle is that there are certain things which you need to check, there are certain things which you need to ask, so that we are sure that this person is really in the country for a reason which is coming for. So those principles of security, we want to make sure that we take them. Those principles of customer service, we want to ensure that we take them properly and all that. So those are the principles which we want to roll it out as we go forward. The issue of the targets, which Honorable Jason Matuna, that we have shifted, I'm sure Dr. Kennedy will respond on that, and SAFO will respond on the 814, and even the compensation of employees. What I can explain with the compensation of employees is simple says that Treasury is so difficult for them to give us a total amount of increase in your establishment in a big way. So that's why you will see that we are only growing our staff at a rate of about, in fact, we started at 417 additional posts, and then now it was 1,180. Now with this, we are looking at about 1,298. So it's a small amount which you have, which you shift here and there. So that's why you will be growing at that rate. Hence, we are saying automation will also assist us in the department in order for us to be able to deliver on those needs, but not on the basis that we're going to get a big amount from Treasury. They are not. It's so difficult that you can get money for personnel. You have to prioritize within your budget in order to be able to do that. That's why the only percentage will be about that 3 to 2%. Disability program, everyone will take that one as well. Nigerian is what I've already explained, to say that was the problem which we have in that matter. But the cabinet is working on it. I'm sure within a period they will again announce the process going forward. Libombo Border Post, I've touched on it and explained what is the issue. Cadet program, I think it's a point that when we deal with that, we need to target the disabled people. But when maybe everyone respond on that, we'll touch both on that. 50-50 gender parity, we agree, is something which we really, really want to push this thing. It's a matter which is, we want to really deal with it, but in practice, it's what you see that is still there, but we are trying in the department that when we
their points. We really that night at DDG level and as well as chief directors, because now we only have got two females at the chief at the DDG level, but even at the chief director we try, like now the new chief director budget. Yes. So we are trying but not yet there. Then Honorable Kuka, and the one of Zimbabwe duplication, I was not sure about that. Question, I didn't get it clear. What was the problem with the Zimbabwe? But I will get maybe on maybe the next round, Honorable will clarify for us. Tabancho office is a clear thing that we don't want offices like that, but we want to make sure, that's why we have the look and feel, so that our offices must look at the same. So it's a process which we're dealing with. I'm interested in Khanyesa now, Sefo, just out was Khanyesa. They were renting those park homes. My understanding, they were looking for another place, but Sefo will talk about Khanyesa office, because there's something which we're dealing with. Smart card. No, smart card, why it is not, there's no budget for a smart card, is that this one is just a small pilot, only 2,000 cards, which now will be, remember now that with the GPW, you are already printing the passports, so that money is available within GPW, because we are not rolling it out, it's just a pilot. So GPW will be buying that, that material, not us, just to do those 2,000 cards. That's why they're not reflecting in our budget. So that's why it is a zero. It's just a smart card. It's only 2,000. It's not more. Then now, when we deal with the smart card now roll out going forward, is that we needed, as we said, that now the time which we are targeting that, but as we said in the last meeting, that the minister will be announcing this matter on the during our budget speech. But just to say to the member, why 2,000? There's no budget, it's because we're piloting it with public, with GPW, and then now going forward, ministers will announce so that we know that now in the 13, 14 going forward, how we're going to do it. The others about budgets, all of the other questions and skills, JK will deal with the issue of this. Relation with the higher education. The issue of the rural offices, you know, when we approach Treasury, also is one of the things we're looking at to say, even up, I think in one meeting we did raise that issue to say, we were looking, even if you go to the rural areas, even places like maybe high schools, but there was an issue that maybe high schools with the problems they have might not be able to provide us that. But we're also looking at the traditional offices, because there are traditional centers in the rural areas. And also, there are also halls which they build for communities. Mm-hmm. And then those halls, we find that they are aimed, they are more or less used when there is a community meeting or there is a funeral. Mm-hmm. So we want to look at them that they can't give us that during the week. We can't be able to use those halls. So it's something which we really want to look at, how we can expand to the rural areas. And in terms of the death, we are finalizing now our regulations in terms of the civics. It's something which we check first. Is it by law that deaths must be registered? And we found out that it is by law. It's not by choice. But our people at the moment, they only think that they register death if they're going to go and claim for insurance or whatever. If a person is not working or whatever, they don't see the reason why they must register. So we, in the regulation now, we are making sure that people must know why it is law to register. Therefore, we need now to engage traditional leaders and other eminent people. I was even saying, where I grew up in the Eastern Cape, then people like teachers and Murudis, they were doing that registration. They know that in the community, I will go and register. After, you will go to the magistrate office and come back. So we need to go back to things like that and see how so we make sure that people mustn't bury without. But the regulation is going to be clear to say you cannot bury a person without a death certificate, whether case issued there, others in that case, so it's something we're looking at.
Just why do we overload the teachers and not employ people specifically who will deal with that?
I think so. It was not necessarily, I was saying people of eminence in the community. Because remember, all my first offices are there for people to register. But if now we're going to say, with this money we're talking about, and say, if now we're going to extend that service, say we'll appoint, I don't know how many people, we might not have that capacity. It can't be immediate. So we're saying, what are other options which we can utilize to get into that? Like the stakeholder forums to have implemented.
But is there any way which we can be able to extend that function? We can look at that, maybe people give an allowance or whatever, something which can be.
So, DG, Honorable Cosman wants to make a follow up, especially on that.
Yeah.
And I think I agree with the DG that there are CGWs. I'm sure we can also utilize the CGWs. So, I actually agree with. Yes. Let me make an example. And sometimes, you know, when you are teacher here, it's very easy for us to articulate. But go to the ground and feel exactly what is happening. Then you will feel the need. There's a village in KZN called Opate. People walk about 20 to 25 kilometers a day to go to where they take. That will then take them about 40 to 45 kilos to Ladies' Mill. You know, it's a journey of 2 days for those people to access these things that you are talking about. And as of now, not every ward has got a CDW. It's a reality we must face. And at the end of the day, if you talk CDW, they've got all these departments they are waiting with them. And here we're talking an issue of security. Something that will have an effect to our system. We are now in trouble because we allow things to happen and we didn't register this, we didn't do this thing in time. And that's why I'm saying there's a need, as we're busy implementing new systems that are trying to control and stop some of the things from happening. But on the ground, something must be happening to also ensure that we don't allow more of those things to come in. Then we won't solve the problem, and they will always be working backwards. And so that's why I'm saying there's a need for us to look on that thing.
No, we accept that issue, as I was saying, something which is on the table. But what we're talking about is that what would be the models of doing so that we just ensure that people, they register. Even as the other point was the one of creating awareness, we need to run programs which are sent to our people. Death must be registered. At the moment, people, they think that death is only registered if you want to change. So we still need to start at that level. And then after that, you say, what vehicles must I use to ensure that this thing happens? So it's something which we will be looking at. Then now, then I think we've dealt with the issue of the late of registration. No, you recall that the drivers, we said when we were appointing the trucks, every truck has got a driver. Those numbers are only referring to the additional post, not. So every driver. So it means in others that two, for example. How do we measure that the stakeholder forums are effective? It's exactly these issues we're talking about, that once there is in a community, there is no person without a bed. And that's how we see that our stakeholders are being effective. In a community, there's no choice. When government is saying, here is a grant for a child, but as a child, you still go to the bed without food, just because there's not a birth certificate in order to go and get the grant. So we are measuring in terms of these services which must be delivered to our people. That is the governance forum must carry that. Well, it is of if now centralization is
the working efficiently or not in terms of the employment. Yes, the first thing which now we are saying it works efficiently is that in the past, we did not even have a record of who has applied for the permit. Because it was in a province in a manual process. Now we implemented the check and check. So immediately I submit my application, I get the check and the SMS saying no application has been submitted. At headquarters, we're able now to check that application to the SMS. Where we are now, we are able to really work in a system that we deal with the applications as we receive them, we clean that packet. But we're still clearing our backlog. Once our backlog is over, then now we're able to say, for a permit, you apply for it, you get it. And that's what is happening. Because we split. It says, no, we can't go and clean the backlog. Once we're not having a process which is working well for your current application. Why specific SADF? We recall that we said that was a pilot within the SADF. Who will forward with this cutting system we are thinking about? It will not be necessary that we get that point from it. First, maybe the cutting system will say you can get people with the same training on this and that and then train them. So it was because it was a pilot. I think it's the same thing when you ask what has been the outcome of this case. This case is at a departmental level, as I've already indicated to you, that you get decisions, either it's a return warning or a person is dismissed and all that, but it also comes back on a back door that this person now has gone to another structure and come back to another issue. So it's something which we deal with it, but in the past it was more on the corruption and all that. Then we said, yes, corruption is an issue. But even service delivery is an issue. If people are not performing, they are not having to take it. So it is a problem. When we say official is patriotic, we really were saying is a person who is a South African. It is a person who is an interest at heart of the people of this country. If I'm patriotic, you call me in the midnight. My phone number is everywhere. I'm saying if there's a citizen of this country who has 12 midnight, is in a border post, can do whatever, and calls me. I'm not going to take that responsibility because I'm saying I'm a patriot. I know what are the principles of this country. So that all that the officials are looking for. So people understand where this country comes from, what it stands for, that we are about people. So if we can do that, then that's what I think. I think let me hand over now to the other colleagues, maybe starting with Mr. Kieser, and we'll go to the question and then Jackie, that's what you want to ask, and then we take the first one and then we'll give them all the questions. But not
I've just been promoted.
Ow.
So is it the CFO who's going to start or?
The Director General, Honorable Members, has already responded to the CEO of the stakeholder forum. However, I think it's important just to indicate the reason, because you can only measure impact if you know what was the purpose and the objective to establish forum. And among others, the key was to improve service delivery at a local level and allow them to advise the department as and when required about where are we not meeting our obligation and mandate. And therefore, the key elements that we identified were, among others, to deal with the issue of elimination of LRT, ensuring that we've got powerful stakeholder forums in the rural areas in particular, where most people were not documented, and the results are indicating that with their collaboration and going out with the shareholder forums, telling us where exactly Home Affairs is not reaching the services of the people, we were able then to deal with this problem of LRD, which is showing a critical decline now. And that means then that those who were in the obscurity and unknown people can now have their full citizenship and identity. But also, among other issues, was the issue of birth registration within 30 days and changing the culture and the mindset of the community of South Africa. And in this context, we believe also that through the working with the stakeholder forums and ensuring that the advocacy when we engage in visas or in the outreach program, these messages are sent far and wide and they're able to assist us at a qualitative level. And we can be able to indicate that there is improvement in relation to that. But also in terms of issues of helping Home Affairs front offices where we are not necessarily there, as they play oversight, they assist us also to determine if there are levels of corruption and fraud in what particular offices, and they're able to escalate and draw attention to the department so that the department can be able to intervene, as it has happened in the Eastern Cape when we were to deal with the issue of imbomboses. It was not for us, it was our making, but it was based on the very information provided by the locals for the forums there. And they were able then to alert us and we had to work with social development in order to clean the population register and make sure that it's got integrity that it requires to have. And then therefore there are a number of both qualitative and quantitative measures that we utilize to measure the impact of the stakeholder forums. And then on the issue of the hospital connectivity and whether the numbers are correct, if the honorable members will go to page 22, you'll see the projected intention of the department to connect the hospitals year on year, so that eventually, based on the maternity wards that are in the hospital, we are able to have eventually both all of them connected, but also having staff. But the department was able to show its commitment in this regard when it realized that we cannot drop Peter to pay for the DG or the degree. And we have started to create a structure that talks directly to hospitals as well as to mobile offices. In this regard, this year alone, we are able to appoint 65 full-time staff at a level 5. And that then indicates that progressively we'll capacitate as the budget has allowed, but also as we have prioritized, so that every hospital in the world, where there is a certain threshold of a number of beds per day, we are able to make sure that there is a full-time staff there who is able to look. And the structure was created in a manner that we have full-time calls at level 5. And in this regard, we are believable on track. It's the same thing that has happened with the mobile office. Maybe linked to that, then, is that the strategy of the department to deal with areas where we are unable to call using the mobile offices. What we have also decided is the issue of the 4x4s, which must then be able to reach in the areas that are even in deeper areas of community where the big truck cannot reach. In that way, we should be able to ensure that BEST is registered within 30 days. Then there was an issue that was raised by the honorable members around and the issue of how many and how far away with the hospitals. As we had indicated that we are in our 135 now, we are hoping we'll have even more toward the end of this financial year. But the strategy is indicating that for 12-30, we are intending to connect about 80, and then it goes to 99. In terms of Department of Health, they indicated to us that the real hospitals with the, other than the clinic, is the issue of 579 hospitals that we can focus on. But then the minister advised that we cannot use the thresholds we have, and she indicated that there are rural areas where you cannot have a double edge suffering of people just because the threshold does not allow, and therefore you do not connect also. And therefore the strategy was again redirected to also focus on the very rural so that we can allow people to register and also within the within a shorter distance. So, but we are hoping that over the next 3 years or so, we should be able then to cover the key hospitals that are having bad registration as a strategic objective. The question was then raised linked to that on the LRB and why do we have to have this planning committee. The LRB can be used as a conduit for corruption and fraud, and it can corrupt the population register of the country, where you will end up with not knowing who is a citizen and who is not. Because because fraudulent activities were taking place. The analysis that was done, it was quite clear that that is used as a job for people who are different nationals, who then avoid the laws of the country of immigration to go through permanent residence and go through naturalization for them to acquire citizenship. And therefore, they will collude with syndicates and corrupt officials and community members and end up with them being on the population register. So it became necessary that then the LRP process is streamlined and present in such a way that the interviewers are able to identify whether those people who are both making testimony, are they making their false testimony, do they really know the person, but also can we verify the documents and the information they provide to us that this person is a citizen. It was in that regard that these adjudication and certain committees were made quite critical. Again, stakeholder forums play a role there because they assist us also that if we need further information around it, but also as people, of, as eminent people in the community, we're able to utilize them during that process to see whether then at the end of the day, the person who claims self-evident citizenship after being 18 years, 20 years, 35 years, unregistered, is it really or she really a South African or it is another means to acquire citizenship for plenty. So that is why there's so many that are critical. And then I think from my side, DJ, and those were the key areas, there was an issue that was raised maybe about whether are we going to make money, and assuming with the connectivity of of the bank, the third party online verification.
Yeah.
Yes, and that element, we did do analysis of, firstly, just to indicate that how much should a transaction be, and the National Treasury approved, and the amount of money that should be paid per transaction, and it was at 15 cents. And we believe that yes, it will generate revenue for the department. Already as we speak today, we have 150 ODF branches that are connected to the online verification. The rollout is continuing with the bank, and we will be able to then, maybe as we look at the projections, the banks gave us their analysis of projected volumes. Maybe we'll have to quantify that, and then based on that, we can be able to come to what is likely to be the revenue. But we do have those from the banks who are indicating us how many, what are the volumetrics that will assist us in terms of and really doing the transaction. And if we do that with the costing, we should be able to come to the same. capacity problems with the local offices, I think the DG did address this matter, but it's important to indicate that there was a deliberate effort to really first capacitate the heads of offices, because where there is no management, even if you've got a lot of people working there, but you need leadership and direction. And that is why the development focus first on the issue of really reinforcement for heads of offices. And thereafter then we continue to reprioritize the post so that the front offices have that capacity. I think we will continue to see how best we can deal with the shortage of staff. But as you have the relief of having full-time staff in mobile, as well as the relief in having full-time in hospital, you will then relieve the staff in the local office and reduce them when you have an outreach program. And that will assist them to complement the challenge of the problem of capacity. And I think that is covering the area that needed to cover. Thank
you.
Thank you, Chair and other honourable members. I thank you, DG. DG has also, in essence, covered quite a few of the questions. But perhaps just as a follow-on, particularly around the issue on disability and why, what is the problem and why it may be seen or appear that we're not taking it that seriously. But I thought I want to assure the portfolio committee membership that we actually are taking the disability matter more seriously. The national target being 2%, we've actually now looked at increasing our target to at least 1.5%. And in this financial year, you will also see that there's a slight spike from that 0.3 to 0.5%. And of course, we are also, just in terms of the program and around the Permanent Equity Forum, from a disability perspective, we have engaged with the local social development departments nationally and provincially. And of course, we are accessing their database in terms of the choice that we do source disabled candidates. What we've also been struggling with, where the challenge is that we're struggling to retain some of the disabled people currently beyond disability resignation. So when we bring the disabled people in, some are also exiting. So it's difficult for us, but yes, we understand we need to be focusing, and we want to ensure that we do increase the current 34 disabled people that we have in the organization to higher numbers. What we want to do generally as well, maybe if I can just follow on the question that talks to gender parity and how we intend to reach that 50-50. We have also revised our numerical goals for this year. We are also wanting to look at ensuring that we review the constitution of our panels. Currently, we are dominantly male at the higher level, but we also want to ensure that we bring more females into the panel. We're also looking at possibly bringing this into the performance agreement of line management. And of course, some of our change programs will also talk to equity generally, or employment equity. Practically, though, on the ground, we must also say that we've held back on appointing some of our positions, like the provincial managers and some of the district office managers, although we are now at the tail end. Our strategy there was really to go on a headhunting approach because we had gone through an entire process and still not quite found the caliber of female candidates that we would have liked. So we will also be seeing some female candidates coming to the provincial manager level and the director level in provinces. We've actually turned back some submissions where there's been female non-female requests in some areas of the organization. And of course, we are also experiencing some backlash on that because the staff, the male prospective candidates have gone through the Public Service Commission and so on, because they are now agreed. But yes, we are taking our employment equity quite seriously for these findings. Just maybe to add in on the disciplinary matters, the categories that we do look at a high level are financial misconduct. These normally relate to issues of theft of state funds, failure to bank state money, and so on. We also have fraud and corruption cases where there's aiding and abetting, fraudulent birth registration, unlawful endorsement of passports, irregular issuing of naturalization, documentation, soliciting bribes, and so on. We also have improper conduct, where we look at issues of poor service delivery, client complaints, dereliction of duty and responsibility, failure to safeguard face value documents in our strong rooms, and so on. There are other categories that we look at, like poor performance, sexual harassment, misrepresentation, and absenteeism. And some of these are also more progressive rather than just going directly into dismissal. So I think that is what I would have liked to add at a high level with regards to the two. There was an additional question that also came up with regard to the skill development levy, and it's not being equitably distributed, and what then our relationship is with the higher Department of Education. Yes, we understand that we should be budgeting the 1% for the skill levy. Currently, our budget is sitting at, should be 23 million, but we budgeted 17 million because we are utilizing the difference to cover S&T costs and travel and so on in relation to our training program. And over and above that, yes, we are interacting with the Department of Higher Education. Currently, the Department of Home Affairs also participates on the Human Development Council, that is chaired by the Deputy President, and our Minister also is in this council. And I know that we also do have links back to the Lama and to the Chief Peter. So, Jack, I don't know if you want to add.
No, I think that covers the questions that you asked. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair.
has a question around the relationship between the settlement of 800 and something and the 300 and something million of fruitless and wasted expenditure. As members will remember, we settled with Kijima, and obviously when you're settling, there will be a loss, and that loss equates to fruitless and wasteful expenditure when you put it into accounting or accounting terms or the PSMA language. So the 321 relates to the amount of the amount of settlement that we have paid. I think we have made presentations to this committee several times where we said there was a loss, and that loss obviously is that 321, and it was shared equally between Kijima and the department. The issue of Tabanchu and Khanyisa, honourable member, we are looking at this matter. We've actually sent the needs analysis to Department of Public Works to identify buildings around Khanyisa. Because currently, in terms of the capital works project that we have, we do not have sufficient funds to go and build immediately. So firstly, we need to identify a site. Then there should be site clearance that will be done. So we are prioritizing Khanyisa for that. But in the meantime, we are looking at having a rented office rather than leaving it up until we build something. Tavanchu, we will look at that matter of Tavanchu. The provision for asset depreciation and bad debt, when government does the cash budget, you look at, we don't budget for accrual, we don't do accrual accounting, therefore even the budget is not accrual accounting. So in accrual budgeting, you will have things like provision for asset and depreciation, provision for bad debt. But the way government uses modified cash basis of accounting, therefore, we do not depreciate our assets. And if you have to write off your budget, you will see it in the new report, but you are not going to see it in your budget because you do not budget for that. We only do the cash budgeting. Even the provision, it will only see it in your books because your provision does not reduce your budget. So your budget that is appropriated to you is there. It doesn't get reduced by the people that are not paying their debts. You need to obviously report it in the annual report, but you're not required to budget for it. Same as depreciation. Instead, we budget for replacing the old assets, so we'll budget for that. Like IT will have techno refresh over a certain period to deal with the old assets that are sitting in your book. The budget for the provinces, in 2019, we went through a budgeting where we made sure that the provinces have budgeted appropriately for their operating expenses. The issues of the, and that was taking into consideration the geographical spread in those provinces, but perhaps it was not done properly. That's why some of them have got shortfalls. And the issue of environment that we showed in the last quarter, it was around the compensation of employees where positions haven't been filled on time. Therefore, where you have your budget for the whole financial year, however, the positions were only filled maybe 6 months into the financial year, you will then have a surplus in your compensation of employees, and that's the money that we then moved from the provinces to other priorities that were not funded, like the APP. So that's what happened with those firemen or the negatives that we were showing in the provinces budget. What are the policies to make sure no unauthorized expenditure? The department department has got a supply chain management policies, and it deals specifically with what needs to happen before or goods and services are procured. So with that, we monitor then what is happening. So before somebody can go and buy a computer, there are processes that need to be followed to make sure that the employees don't just go and buy the computer. They follow due process, and we also have a delegation of authority which says who is supposed to authorize which expenditure up to which amount. So those processes are there. They might not be working, but they are there, and maybe we need to strengthen the monitoring part of those processes. The other thing, this unauthorized expenditure, it came due to our budget being overspent on a specific line item. So let's say, for instance, I give an example of Wayu. We've been given 314 million. Then on Wayo, you go and you spend more than the 314 million. That on itself is unauthorized expenditure. The difference between the actual expenditure and the budget that is given to you. So there are different types of unauthorized expenditure, and obviously the department is making sure that the budgeting is done properly and the planning is done properly, so that when somebody starts spending, they're spending against a budget that was done properly, and things are budgeted a line item, which is what we have done this year. Maintenance of offices. In the past, when it comes to this RAM, which would be the maintenance of the building in terms of the structure, maybe expanding it or demolishing a wall and all those things. That's what REM is all about. Then you've got planned maintenance, which would be your day-to-day maintenance. Let's say a tile comes out of, that needs to be fixed because the clients, when they come, they will fall and then we will be in trouble. So, and also maybe painting, that's planned maintenance. So we've got a lot of repairs, which will be to the structure of the building. Then the planned maintenance will be the small things that are done on a daily basis. The honorable member also raised an issue around the budget, public works budgeting for that and us budgeting for that. All state-owned buildings, it's public works responsibility to maintain them. What has happened, Treasury has then devolved the funds to all the departments so that we can have control on what needs to be done to some of the state buildings. But there are definitions to say to what point or what are the activities that the department should carry out as maintenance, what public works should carry out as maintenance in those state-owned buildings. Like the day-to-day maintenance, we need to make sure that when something happens on the tower, that gets fixed immediately. That budget is allocated to us. But we still need to go to public work to procure that. But the budget lies with us, and then public works will then bill us, and then we will pay public works. So that's how it works with the state-owned buildings. I think that's all the questions. If I'm not clear, that's all that I've highlighted.
Only one comment.
Did you?
Yeah. It was the IT help part.
Yes.
So on that issue, what we are dealing with is that we said that now we have established now the steering committee, which means we'll be finalizing now our definitive agreement. Then in the definitive agreement is where the help part is going to be coming, was going to be saying. But it is key at a high level because that we said the development of the system is Home Affairs, and then the delivery of the equipment and the installation is Kijima. So once we finish now that document, then the out part is going to be coming clear and says, this one is going to be doing this, this one is going to be doing this, this one is going to be doing this. they're going to come for our quarterly review for end of March, which will be April, maybe. Then we'll be able to come with that whole part, because everything now will be signed.
Thank you, Honorable Santibone, and Honorable Marcella will be the last people to ask questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question relates to the 3% rate increase compensation to employees, against the fact that we want to increase capacity. So how are you going to make the connection between the two? It doesn't make sense. Also, why is no cost protection to fleet services and government transport in 2012-2013? Because you've heard what Mr. Mkiza was saying, that they want to have 4x4s to reach out to the rural communities and stuff like that. So which is there's going to be more demand if we employ more people to be focused in those specific areas? Now, how are you going to deal with that if you don't have budget that's allocated to it? Chairperson, in the last one is, what is the reason for the significant increase on the expenses, which is on the venue expenses, from 15 million in the 2011-12 financial year, which is the year under review, and to 22 million rand into the current financial year, 2013, the next financial year. So I just need some clarity in terms of the increases around that.
Just to manage to
again,
the increase in expenses, on improvement of the residential infrastructure. I noticed that you have Ramatabama and School Street and others, but there was still it was under construction, but we were worried that it wouldn't meet the time they are supposed to work within the specified time. But because of problems that they had there, they wouldn't meet that time. So that they can also. So, and the issue of water in that particular area was a problem of the city. And you know, since I joined Home Affairs, we've been raising the issue of Home Affairs offices in Soweto. And Soweto is one of the biggest areas. And I see there are 8 new offices to be opened. I don't know, somewhere booking and saying it's one of them. But we raised the issue of Soweto before the meeting. So it's about 18 years now. Talking about the Home Affairs office in Soweto. Honorable Postman, your last question.
It's not a question, it's a comment. It's a comment. One is that today we proved the point that the budget is actually a paper, it's a guideline, but the actual money is in the bank. Because we see that we can budget for 300 and something, and all of a sudden 500 and something. So that means here, for in future, when we need things, we shouldn't be told there's no money. But if motivation is made, money is there in the bank. Now, the second one is to congratulate the department. I applied for a passport last week, Tuesday. On Thursday, I got an SMS that it is readily available. So I think we are really getting there.
Because you're a member of Parliament.
but I think that shows that if it can be done to me, why can't it be not be done to a member of public out there? So we're saying some of us, we start by being a bit firm, but it doesn't mean we don't see what you are doing. Thank you, Chair.
And also, DJ, as you indicated that you are going to have a pilot project for the smart car, we thought members can also be included.
Well, in fact, we'll start with the last part. To say, on the day of the budget speech, as we normally do, Minister, I'm sure is going to be writing something to the members with regard to that issue. So members must look for that letter. Yes. Well, I don't know what it could be, but I know Minister's going to write a letter. So, then, I will deal with it. This 3%, what I was explaining to Honorable Ruas, was asked as well by Honorable Peterson Matuna. To say it is something that shows like it is in contradiction of what we want to do. But he says the intentions are there, but the issue is not so. So for us, as long we are able that as little as what we have, we must be able to improve. That was saying now in the 2009-10 we had 417 positions. In 10-11 it was 118. Now we're looking at about 1298. So we're still growing, but not at a huge pace because of the funding we get. But it's something which we always go to treasure. But we really hope that the automation which we're going to deal with it is going to free some people. Because if you look at now the process of the ID now, you go to an office, you apply for an ID, it goes to PDR, they do something, it goes to the government printer, after that it comes back to the PDR to put in the book and do something. But immediately now you go to automation, that ID will go straight without any human element. I go in front of the, like the passport. The only why the passport are quicker. You stick in front of that booth. Once I finish that, I get my proof out. No booth again would do something like that. So we get implement now this live capture for ideas. The staff members will have to catch from civics who will try and deploy them again in the front office. So it's something we should be doing. So the safer will respond. But what I know with the venues in the last, those remember this was in the last meeting of the budget committee, we took a decision that we cut on the venues and facilities by 50%, so now we can go and fund other processes. But yet the EMB chapter was already finished and issued on that, but it's within the consensus. So it's something we should look at it because at a hallmark, we've got a big bottle there which can take about 400. So it means now we're not going to go outside for our normal meeting, so we'll cut on that. But then we'll do the residential accommodation scheme part. No, Chair, thanks for that. It's something we're going to go back and look at it. And as well, the Soweto is a worrying issue that has been on the table, but we're going to go and have a look what we can do for Soweto, except get the rental. Offices, we had a permanent office for Home Affairs, something we should look at.
There's a change in classification. Instead of having the fleet services, we've kept it here for historical data, and that's for treasury purposes. But the if we have to get what do you call it? If we have to go and hire a car from government garage, the expenses now goes under traveling and subsistence.
and instead of going to fleet services. That's why there's no budget under fleet services. But we have adequately budgeted for that.
Thank you, DG, and the officials of the department. We thank you very much for the information and the presentation that was made on the annual performance plan. Now, no longer strategic plan. We want to thank you for comprehensive input. And like members have said, that we hope that the department will every time improve on what we're doing. And we hope that we will continue getting an unqualified report, and the next time it will be clean and unqualified report. We must put more effort and ensure that we reach that goal. And not forgetting to improve the lives of our people, to better the issuance of our national documents, because there's nothing that people can do if they don't have an ID or a birth certificate. Honorable members, on that note, I want to thank you also for the meeting.
Yes,
thank you.
Yeah.